the way the market had been prior to starting Third Love was this idea that you could either have a comfortable bra that wasn't really beautiful, or you had a beautiful bra, but it would be scratchy and you would never wear it. And we were committed from the very beginning to say, we're going to create beautiful and comfortable bras. So really everything we do, creating that third option, that third love.
Welcome to Retail Gets Real, where we hear from retail's most fascinating leaders about the industry that impacts everyone, everywhere, every day. I'm Bill Thorne from the National Retail Federation. And on today's episode, we're talking with Heidi Zack, the co-founder and CEO of online intimate apparel brand, Third Love. We're going to talk to Heidi about her career journey, how the brand connects with today's customers, and Third Love's recent expansion into brick and mortar locations. Heidi Zack, welcome to Retail Gets Real.
Hi, Bill. Happy to be here.
We're excited to have you, and I'm excited to learn more about your business. And one of the things that we enjoy more than anything else as we talk to retailers, large and small, is the entrepreneurial story. And you've got a great story. So let's start there. How was Third Love born?
Yeah, so it's about 10 years now in the making. It's been about a decade. At the time I was working at Google, I had moved from New York to San Francisco, took a break from retail to do the tech journey for a couple of years. And I was inspired by everyone building really big, cool things out in Silicon Valley. And it was a really different experience for me. And so one of the days I was at Google, I had to bra shop. And I did what I had done, you know, basically since I had been a teenager, which was I got into my car and I drove to a mall, a physical mall, and I went inside and I went to a Victoria's Secret because that's where I bought my bras, similar to a lot of women. And I went in and there was, you know, the pink velour and the young associate with the measuring tape and the smell of perfume. And I kind of got a bunch of bras, tried them on, settled for something that like sort of fit, not really. And I left Victoria's Secret with the pink striped shopping bag. And I took that bag and I looked at it and I stuck it into the tote bag I was carrying because I was embarrassed as a grown woman to still be shopping at this brand that was totally not aligned to my values with product that didn't really work for me, right? And the fact that I had actually taken, you know, an hour and a half out of my day to do it like the old school way versus buying it online, all of these things, I came home and I said to my husband, I have my business idea. And he's like, what is it? And I was like, it's bras. And he stared at me blankly. And I went into all the reasons why, right? You know, and I kind of walked him through the same thing. And he, you know, he at the time was working at Sequoia Capital and he was thinking about starting a business in e-commerce. And that's how the original idea came about. It was really a bad bra shopping trip.
It's always amazing to me, again, when you talk to the entrepreneurs, that it's usually something that is bothering them. I mean, it's like, I got to solve for this. And if I solve for this, I might be solving for others, and this might actually be a business. That's pretty impressive. Now, I understand that you're going to brick and mortar strategy. So, you know, brick and mortar's dead. Why in the world would you do that?
Well, it's very funny because probably 5 years ago, I think I was quoted in numerous articles saying, we'll never open a retail store. Like, we're a digital business. So, you know, whatever I say today may or may not hold going forward. Yeah, no, I mean, to be candid though, when I started Third Love, it really was with this vision of like, who wants to go to the store to bra shop? Like, we're going to build this business online. Bra shopping isn't fun. People don't have the time for it. And so we were digital, digital, digital. And we had one pop-up in New York right before COVID, but definitely the past few years, I've just come to realize we've done a lot of customer research, right, of women who haven't converted, but no Third Love of like, why, right? And a lot of it is the fact that they want to be able to try something on in store to make sure the style or size works for them, to have more personalized attention. And there is no version of online retail that can do the things that I just described. It doesn't exist. Maybe it will in 50 years, right? But until that exists, there's just an element of brick and mortar that's way, way, way better than shopping online, you know, depending on who your customer is and what their needs are. And so for me, it's really about meeting our customer where she is. So we have 10 retail stores today. So we're We're slightly more omnichannel than we were a year ago, and it's really exciting.
You have 10? Are they mostly in urban, or is it kind of a mix?
It's urban, but across the country, mall, street, smaller stores, bigger stores. We did a lot of experimentation with these stores in terms of just trying to learn, you know, what would make the most sense for us for the next batch of stores.
Yeah. It is interesting to me. I mean, you talk about a lot of the retailers that started online and was strictly online, but you look at the Warby Parkers, the Rhones, the Allbirds, Minister Supply. I mean, they're all like, well, we thought that's where we were going to be, but in fact, you got to go to where the customer is and what they want. And that tactile experience seems to be very, very important. It is interesting to see so many that are moving to, and not massive, but you know, they're getting them where they need to be. And I think that that is a brilliant strategy. Brick and mortar is not dead. As a matter of fact, it's thriving as a result of people like you and your business recognizing the importance of that, going to the customer. So the area where you are, I mean, the space is more crowded than when you started. So what sets you apart as a business now?
Yeah, absolutely. When we started, D2C wasn't even a term. Direct to consumer didn't even exist. So the world's changed a lot in the past 10 years. You know, the three pillars that we built this brand on are still what differentiates our brand from others. You know, the first was around the product itself, having as expansive as the size range as we can. Still today, we offer 65 bra sizes. We are the only brand in the world that offers half cups. So I've often said, you know, shoes have half sizes, why shouldn't bras? So definitely our sizing and that focus on kind of innovation and fit across all those sizes is really key to delivering on our customer promise, which is to make women look and feel great. That goes hand in hand, first and foremost. You know, the second is really our digital tools, our fitting room tool. 20 million women have done our fitting room. We have a massive amount of data on women's fit issues, preferences. We tie that back to the experience they have when they're shopping at Third Love. So that really is super important. And then the last is a commitment to a really authentic brand. I think that part has become more ubiquitous in the market, you know, due in part to brands like Third Love that showed that you could actually market bras shockingly to women instead of men and build a really big business doing so. But yeah, really laddering back to those three and staying true to that, regardless of, you know, what size we are and how big we've gotten.
I am remiss because I was going to ask you this at the top. What does Third Love, where did that name come from?
Creating a third love or a third option for women. So the way the market had been prior to starting Third Love was this idea that you could either have a comfortable bra that wasn't really beautiful, or you had a beautiful bra, but it would be scratchy and you would never wear it. And we were committed from the very beginning to say, we're going to create beautiful and comfortable bras, creating this third option. The idea that women were like pigeonholed into sizes and or not offered enough. So the idea you had to be a B or a C, no, we created a B and a half. So really everything we do, creating that third option, that third love.
It's so interesting that you used the example of the half size for shoe size, because a colleague of mine said, well, it's, you know, one thing that really sets them apart, which is absolutely fantastic, is that it has a half size. And I was like, well, does that really, as a non-bra wearer, does that really make a difference? It's like, well, it's like a shoe. If you're a 10 and a half, I mean, it makes a difference if you have a 10 or 11, and all of a sudden, ding, the light goes off. Yeah, it's brilliant. There's a part of your business, and if anybody reads anything about Third Love, one thing that you're going to hear about is inclusion and diversity as values that help shape the business. Tell me, how do we get into this space?
Yeah. So again, going back to 2012, if you looked at what existed and how bras were marketed, I mean, it was the way they'd been marketed for a really long time. And the most successful brands really laddered back to sexy first and really through the lens of men. That I think led to a certain profile of how brands were built and what they appeared as, right? They weren't very real or authentic or natural, so to speak, in any sense of it. And so really at the very beginning, I mean, I remember our first photo shoot, we were trying to find models that were outside of like a 34B. And again, 10 years ago, like it was a struggle to just even cast, because all the agencies, they had what brands and companies wanted, which was very standardized ideas of body shape, breast size, like all the stuff that were standard. And we said like we were going to do it differently. And so it wasn't just about size. But if you think for Third Love, we have a lot of elements of what inclusivity looks like, right? Because there's actual like body size, and then there's breast size. That's like another, because you can be tall or short with all kinds of different shaped size breasts. And then you have age or life stage, as I would call it. I mean, we were one of the first brands to use, you know, a model over 50 back in 2017 or 2018. Of course, you have ethnicity. So you have all these kind of elements, and you start bringing those in. It really changes sort of what the brand looks like. And so that's just really been core to what we've always done.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It really is. And I think that that produces a level of loyalty because you're committed to that. And that's authentic. You're not doing it because it's the popular thing to do. You're doing it because that's what you did from the very beginning. And it's had an impact. And people really do appreciate that. And that does produce loyalty. They'll see right through it if you're just doing it for a marketing thing. They'll really appreciate it and be loyal and love it if you're doing it because that's core to your business. And speaking of core to your business, the TL Effect, it's your initiative to support entrepreneurial women of color. Tell us about how you got started on that.
Yeah. So back in 2020, it's hard to believe it was almost 3 years ago, we launched the program in June of 2020. There was a lot of social unrest, as everyone can recall. And we were trying to figure out what we were going to do as a company. And, you know, there was a lot of companies that were doing donations and all these things. And I was sort of like, we got to take a beat here and figure out what's our longer term strategy, because we can donate money, but then what? How does Third Love fit in? What can we do that's really, again, authentic to who we are, what we can offer, and make something that feels and can be a longer term program? And so I actually just came up with the idea. I was like showering one night or something, because we had all these ideas. And I was like, you know what we should do is we should just mentor early stage founders of color, because I can help them and then they can get resources from Third Love and mentorship, which was something also important. Like, how do we get our company involved? And we know consumer. And so, you know, we sort of said early stage consumer companies, female founders of color, give them a grant. So obviously money to spend on whatever they want. There was no equity involved. And then mentorship from me and my executive team. And then also mentorship from our functional groups at Third Love on whatever they may need. And then we also promote their brand. So we promote their brand on our Instagram. We'll feature them in blogs. We'll, et cetera, and just help them just be even just more out there to, you know, the Third Love ecosystem. And we have millions of customers. And so seemingly it's like, oh yes, this was obvious, but that was like really the brainchild of a couple of years ago. And today we just actually picked our fifth cohort winner this week, which will be announced shortly. And so super exciting. So we've had four winners to date and it's been amazing. I mean, they've been really successful in growing their businesses during the time, and they're now alumni of the program. So what's awesome is that they help each other, right?
Oh, that's great.
So, yeah. And then we always have the prior winner, the fourth cohort winner helps us pick the fifth. And so they're also part of the process. And yeah, we're creating this nice little ecosystem. It's been something really important to me and to everyone at the company, and hopefully beneficial to the winners too.
There's no doubt in my mind. I think that's absolutely fantastic. And finding something that has lasting impact. I mean, I think that's what it's all about. There were all these people that were thinking, what can I do? Again, to your point, donations or whatever, but to do something, to establish something that has a long range and lasting, an impact that goes beyond just the moment in time and really helps frame the future. I think that's phenomenal. Congratulations on that. Talent. How do you describe your team and what do you look for when you're hiring?
Great question. So we have five company values and we really try to lens candidates through those values, through the interview process, really trying to, you know, ask questions and get to know them to see if those values are aligned with their personal values. Because what we came to realize over time as we took a step back to say, like, why are some people just so successful here? They really epitomize the company values and how they were naturally, right? You can't force someone to maybe adopt a value that isn't core to who they are. So one of our values, for example, is make it happen. So, you know, take ownership, right? Make it happen, move with a sense of urgency, for example. And so each of those values, we have certain questions that we ask and that we're really trying to just make sense of whether it's a good fit on both ends. And that's been really, really helpful for us the past couple of years as we've started to do that.
That's great. You know, if you were to describe the culture, how would you describe your culture, the culture of Third Low?
I still consider us a startup, even though we're, some people would be like, you're not really a startup, but we are. We're much more of a startup than we are a big company. That's how I run it. That's how I want everyone to feel. Because we're just getting started, right? Like we're in the second inning here, not in the ninth. And so we need to continue to innovate and move with a sense of urgency and be on the forefront of the things that really matter to us, going back to like brand, product, and technology, those three pillars, super, super important. So I would say, you know, a startup culture, but everyone always says this about Third Low when they're interviewing, when they join, even when they leave, if they choose to leave to do something else at some point, which is like, we have just a really great team. People really like working with each other. And I think that's been a huge part of our success too. It's hiring based on those company values, but also hiring people who seemingly, even with very diverse backgrounds, really get along and are good friends.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, you can't lose with that combination at all. Because people look forward to coming into work. It's not work. It's spending time with people of like mind, invested in the same thing. So that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's interesting. I once read an article, and my head of people said this to me recently, but there's a stat, which is like the number one reason people stay at a company. And it's not what you think, right? You'd be like, oh, it's the manager, you know, or it's the function, or it's, you know, the mission of the company. I mean, and all those things are totally important. But the number one predictor of somebody staying at a company is, do they have a quote unquote, a best friend at work? Meaning, do they have someone they have a connection with outside of the company, a strong connection, because that really connects them to the company and also gives them an outlet. And so I think building community, building connection, even in a hybrid or virtual world, if that's the world we're in, is so, so important.
That's great. So, you know, we got a lot of students that actually listen to Retail Gets Real. I hear a lot about it, and we have a great student program that we do every January. One thing that they really like to hear is the career advice. So what is your best piece of career advice?
Each opportunity, every opportunity that you have, you can take away so much from it, even if it's not the perfect opportunity. And in fact, actually, when it's not the perfect opportunity, you may end up realizing you learned more from that in a certain way. So I think whether that's a summer internship, a project, a full-time job, even if it's not exactly what you want to be doing, or you don't jive with your manager exactly, whatever that may be, it doesn't matter. What matters is what you do with the opportunity, how much you learn. And so I think really approaching it from the lens of like, all of these things do matter, and they all at some point will make sense when you reflect back on them, though sometimes it's hard in the moment. So I think that's crucially important. To also give a second piece of advice, even though you asked for one.
I'll take as many as you got.
It kind of is tied to the first one, and that's that every relationship matters. I think this is something that I wish I would have done a better job at earlier in my career, because the world is super small. And in particular in retail, everybody knows everybody.
Oh,
it's not that big, you know, but it doesn't really matter your industry. Like the world's small and everything kind of comes back. And so just making sure, again, whether something's perfect or not, that you leave every relationship on a positive note is so important to both the present and the future.
You know, I often tell the students when I have an opportunity to talk to them that some of the greatest lessons that you will learn in terms of leadership and how to work with others are provided by the worst managers that you will ever have. Those are the ones that will basically embed in your mind, this is not what I'm going to do, and this is not who I'm going to be. And that really does influence the future. Heidi Zack, it has been a true pleasure talking with you. Thank you for joining us today on Retail Gets Real.
Thanks, Bill.
And thank you all for listening to another episode of Retail Gets Real. You can find more information about this episode at retailgetsreal.com. I'm Bill Thorne. This is Retail Gets Real. Thanks again for listening.